is the Cloud Enough Podcast, your launchpad for Amazon Web Services.
Welcome to the Cloud Enough Podcast. My name is Andreas.
And my name is Michael.
And we are two brothers. We are focusing 100% on AWS. We are doing consulting, also developing applications on AWS. So all we do each day is really focusing on AWS. And the Cloud Enough Podcast belongs to our blog, which you can find on cloudenough.io. And each other week, we are discussing a topic here in the podcast. And either me or Michael prepares the podcast, and the other one does not really know what we will talk about here. So it's always a surprise for us. Last week, Michael, do you remember what we talked about last week? I presented a topic there.
Yes, I do, Andreas. So it wasn't actually last week. It was the week before last week, because we only run it every 2 weeks. But you talked about Aurora Serverless, or to be more precise, you provided a review of the service. So we learned that Aurora Serverless does not have replication at the moment, so it's a vertically scaled service that we can use. It comes with MySQL and Postgres compatibility. Now, this is a very hard word to pronounce, compatibility. And yeah, we also went into a few details about this, how the scaling works, that you can pause the database if there are no connections. You can pause it, and then it awakes when the first connection comes in again. So this was kind of the topic. And one thing that we kind of forget to talk about is that in some cases, Aurora Serverless cannot find a so-called scaling point. This means Aurora Serverless detects that it has to scale up, but it cannot scale up because, for example, if you have a lot of write requests going on, then Aurora Serverless cannot scale up. So in one project, I noticed this problem. So they were running a big batch system. So they had a message queue in front of it. And at some point in time, a lot of messages received, and then the system got busy. So a lot of write requests were made to Aurora Serverless, and we were not able to scale up, or the database was not able to scale up, because there were so many writes. And this is actually pretty hard to fix. So you have to make sure that your load kind of increases more or less slowly. So because if you go from zero to lots of requests, then it is not fast enough to scale up. So that's something that I think we just forget it to mention, because we actually run into these issues as well. And it only happens if you have really extremely workloads that go from mostly zero to lots of requests. So if you have a normal workload that increases over time, then this is not an issue at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very good. Yeah, good that you mentioned that. Okay. So last time was reviewing Aurora Serverless. So what's the topic of this week?
Yes, so I prepared a topic about continuous integration and continuous delivery on AWS, but in a way that is very easy or fast to implement.
Okay, that sounds interesting.
Yes, so there are many options on AWS to implement this, and we will focus on one specific service called CodeBuild, but we're also going to look at the whole ecosystem that's available here.
Okay, so before we start here, I always get confused because there are so many services that all start with code. So there's code build, but there's also code commit, code pipeline, code star. I'm always confused. Please explain the difference to me.
Yes, so let's start with code commit. So code commit is a hosted Git repository service. So you can you could compare it to GitHub, but it's a Git repository, and then without all the features that GitHub provides. So there's a very, there is a web interface, but it's much, much simpler than what you are used to when you use GitHub. So that's code commit. The cool thing here is that you can use your AWS credentials to push and pull. So you can use IAM to control access to the repository. And I think that's the biggest benefit here when using code commit. You can also use other remote repositories like GitHub and Bitbucket. They also integrate with the other services. So let's talk about the other services. Code build is basically a way to run a CI/CD job. So it runs inside a container, and then you can execute whatever you like. So you can simple bash script, you can run Ruby scripts or Python scripts, whatever you need to build or test your application. And you can hook code build up to a code commit repository. You can also hook it up to a GitHub repository and other things. So that's what you can do with code build. So if you compare it to other services, code build is kind of the Circle CI, Jenkins, Travis CI kind of thing. So it just runs when you commit something to your repository. And then we have code pipeline. So code pipeline is something that you can wrap around code commit, code build, and many other services. So it's an orchestrating layer for builds. And it can use multiple sources, it can run in parallel, and it can do all kinds of fancy things. It can deploy CloudFormation natively and things like this. So it's a way to model the pipeline around all the AWS services that exist. So you can trigger multiple code builds, for example, in a code pipeline, and you can have multiple code commit repositories as sources for the code pipeline. So this is, I think the service makes a lot of sense if you have more complex code pipelines, maybe with manual approval steps and things like this. So if it gets more complex, and if it really makes a lot of sense to run things in parallel. So if this is your kind of pipeline that you have in mind, then you should check out code pipeline. If you only run a single line basically in your pipeline without parallelization, then code pipeline adds a lot of overhead without many benefits. And that's also kind of the topic of our podcast today.
Okay, so, and there's one missing, CodeStar. What is that? Another code service.
There's CodeStar. So actually, I don't quite know what CodeStar is about. Do you know what it is? So I think it's kind of a development environment or something like this, but I don't know. I never used it.
Yeah, so I also just used it once to play around with it a little bit. So it creates a project which is pre-configured for the use with AWS. So that is my understanding of CodeStar. So it helps you to get started.
Okay, but I think it's quite silent. So I haven't heard a lot about CodeStar in the past. So I think I'm not sure if it's really used by people. So I don't know.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, so we have, so let me summarize that. So we have code commit, which is the code repository. We have code build, which is running the CI job. And we have code pipeline, which helps us to orchestrate complex deployment pipelines. Correct?
Yes. So I think that's correct, yes. So the idea of this podcast is that yes, you can use code pipeline, but the learning curve is pretty steep. And if you are used to CircleCI or GitLab pipelines at the moment, and you don't use or you don't run things in parallel, then you are completely fine using only code build. So you don't need the overhead of code pipeline. I mean, if you're interested in it and if you want to check it out, then that's also, it is not a bad choice. It's a good choice, but it's complex. And if you don't need it, then I recommend to just use code build, because it also does the job in the end.
Okay, so then please explain to us and me, what or how do I build a deployment pipeline only with code build? How does that work?
Yeah, so the basic idea is that you connect a code commit repository to a code build project, and that's basically all you need to do. And then if you push into your repository, the code build is the code build project is started, and commands are executed. So the first question is, how do you define the commands that run? And in our language that we use here, the commands are actually what the pipeline is. So starting from the first command up to the last command, so this is what the pipeline is. So if there's a change in the code commit repository, then we run a series of commands, and the whole thing is what we call the pipeline here. So it's only a single invocation of code build from the outside, but inside of code build, you can execute as many steps as you like to achieve your goal. For example, If you are building a Node.js project or a Java project, the first thing that you might need to do is install the dependencies of the application. And then you will, so in Java world, for example, you will need to package your application, and then you will run your unit tests. And if this is successful, then you might want to run some static analysis on the source code. So do some checking of maybe some style checking, some linting and things like this. And after that, you could deploy the new version of your application to a test environment using CloudFormation, for example. Then you could run some integration tests. So for example, if you are developing a backend application with an API, then you could run some API queries and see if they respond in a way that you expect. And if this is successful, then you could deploy the whole thing to your production environment and then maybe do some smoke tests at the end to make sure that it is still working. And then the series of commands ends and the code build project will be successful, the execution.
Okay, so that's how I set up a deployment pipeline. But how does code, you mentioned that already. So code build runs the pipeline inside a Docker container. Maybe you can go over that a little bit and why this is a good choice and how that works.
Yeah, so the cool thing about this is that you have a predefined environment in which your build runs. So this is very important. So you have all the dependencies that you need are inside a Docker image that is used to run your builds. So you can run, you can provide your own image if you like that you use for building. So then you have complete absolutely know what the state of the image is. You can also use a set of predefined images by AWS. And you can also check out the Docker files for those images. So you also know exactly what kind of libraries are installed, what kind of tools do you have, and what needs to be installed on top of it if you run your build job.
Okay, and maybe one question. So what's the advantage of using your own Docker image here?
Yeah, so I think the advantage is, so if you have dependencies that are not in one of the official or predefined images from AWS, then every time you run the project, you need to install your own dependencies. So you need to download them from the internet, then you need to install them, or maybe you have to compile them first, and then you can use them. And this takes time. So the idea is that the pipeline should run as, or the goal is that the pipeline should be executing very fast, that you get feedback as soon as possible once you commit and push. So if you have large dependencies, it makes sense to create your own Docker image that you use to run your build to avoid that you have to install the dependencies every time.
Okay, so but this is the dependencies for the build itself. So the tools that I need for building the software, not a dependency that the application needs. So that's the important part here. Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
So I can give you one example. So I was creating a code build project for a Ruby on Rails project. So you need to install Ruby on Rails, and this requires quite a few dependencies. So this could make sense to have a Docker image that contains Ruby on Rails, the framework, with all the dependencies that it needs, and then you use this image to build your application that is built on top of Ruby on Rails, for example.
Okay, so how do I then build a pipeline? So how do I enter my shell script or my Ruby script, whatever I do for creating my pipeline? How does that work?
Yeah, so the core of code build is a file called buildspec.yaml. So it's in YAML format, and it defines so-called phases. So there is the install phase. So this is the phase where you should install all the dependencies that you need to run the build. Then we have a pre-build phase, we have a build phase, and we have a post-build phase. And I'm not quite sure how this is really structured or how you should use it. So what should be in the pre-build, what should be in build, what should be in post-build. I think that's not as important. So typically I install all my dependencies in the install phase, and then I use the build phase, do everything that I need to do. because if any of the commands fails, then the pipeline will, or the code build execution will stop. So it will stop either if you use pre-build, build, or post-build phases, or if you just put everything into a single phase. So I'm not quite sure what the differences are here or how is it meant to be used, but usually I put everything in the build phase. So this is the first thing. So you create a YAML file and you define the phases. So phase number one is install, and then phase number two is pre-build, phase number three is the build phase, and phase number four is the post-build phase. And within each phase, you can do different things. And one thing that you can do in all the phases is you can run commands. And commands is just an array of commands that are executed in the default shell. So if you're using the pre-built images, then this is a bash. So you can do whatever you like to do. And there's one thing to keep in mind. So if you are, or if you played around with CodeBuild I think it's already years before, then each command was invoked in its own shell. So if you set an environment variable, for example, it was not available in the next command. So this was very counterintuitive. And so they changed this with version 0.2 of the app spec, which is now the latest version. And then it really behaves as you expect, and is as all the others like CircleCI and GitLab and all the others behave. So that's just important. If you find examples where the version of the build spec is set to 0.1, then it behaves a little bit strange, at least from my, or what I expected when I used it. Okay, so that's what comes into the phases. And then there is the special phase, the install phase. And there's a quite cool feature available, or that was released, I think, a few months before with the so-called version 2 predefined images. You can now, in the install phase, define the runtime environment of your build. So, for example, you can define that you want to have Docker installed in version 18. You can say you want to have Java installed in this version. You can say that you want to have Ruby installed in this version. So before that, you used commands to install the specific version of the runtime that you needed. And now with the version 2 images, you can actually just specify this in your YAML file, and then it will install the dependencies in the correct versions automatically, or enable them automatically when the build runs.
Okay, so that's interesting. So AWS or CodeBuild comes with predefined build environments for typical programming languages and environments like Docker.
Yes.
Okay. So one thing I want to mention for our listeners. So as Michael is going into the details of the build spec YAML file already, we have a blog post that covers the topic of this podcast episode as well. So you will find a link in the show notes at that point that it gets you to the blog post where you can find code examples and all the information in detail if it's maybe hard to just get it from the audio here in the podcast.
Yes. And also something that I want to mention. So if you compare CodeBuild to other services, like other like vendors, you might miss something like a build number. So for example, in CircleCI, you get an environment variable that just increases by one every time the project runs. So this is not available in CodeBuild. Instead, you get some more more UUID kind of style build IDs. So they don't look that nice. If you, for example, want to tag your Docker images, so they get pretty long. So that's kind of something that you might miss if you use CodeBuild. So there is no out-of-the-box mechanism to get a build number that increases by one every time the project runs. So that's something that it's nice in some environments to have it, because it's just easier for humans to then see what happened after each other. Okay. So one thing that I also want to mention is you could put all the commands that you need to run into the build spec YAML file. So everything that is needed. But it turns out that it is easier, or at least what I prefer, and also what other people prefer, is that you put for example, if you use Bash to run your pipeline, then you create a Bash file, you put all the commands in the Bash file, and then you just invoke the Bash file from the build spec command. So this makes sure that your build spec is much smaller and that the actual Bash commands are in a Bash file, and then you can use Bash linters and stuff like this to make sure that it's really that the Bash is correct. And also, if you use, for example, lots of people use Ruby to do these kinds of things, then you can make sure that the Ruby code is correct before you actually run it, or if you use Python and things like this. So it's easier if you separate the programming logic out of the YAML file, because YAML is not really the place where you want to put your code. So that's something that I can really highly recommend doing.
Okay, so maybe a question to understand how the whole thing works. So where do I place the build spec YAML, and where do I place, in your example, the build shell script? Where do I store them so that code build can use it?
So the convention is that the buildspec.yaml file is placed in the root of your project, so in the root of your repository. You can move it to other folders if you like, but then you have to configure that the place so that code build can find the buildspec YAML file. So that's why I just put it in the root directory, and then it's working. And if you, for example, invoke or the build, the script that actually runs that you invoke from the buildspec YAML file can be placed wherever you like. So you just have to provide the correct path to invoke it. So sometimes you have a specific folder for this kind of stuff, or you can also put it in the root directory. So it depends a little bit on how big the whole project is and if it needs makes sense to separate it into different folders or not. But yeah, the build spec by default should be in the root directory. If you want to put it somewhere else, then make sure that you configure code build so that it can find the YAML file.
Okay, so then I'm just checking them in and pushing them to my code commit repository, and that's it.
Yes, correct. So we now discussed how you can define the steps that are executed in your code build project, which is your pipeline. But the question is, how do you create the code build project? And the good news here is that we have full coverage of CloudFormation. So you can create a code build project with CloudFormation. And you have to specify a few things when you create such a project. So for example, you have to specify the environment in which your builds run. So this means you have to select the Docker image that is used for the builds. So you can select one of the pre-built images, as I mentioned, or you can also use your own image. If it is in a private repository, then you have to make sure that the authentication is configured properly so that code build can actually access your image. But if you use the default images, then it just works. You can also specify the kind of horsepower of your build environment. It's called the compute type. And there are three different sizes available at the moment. So the smallest comes with 3 gigabytes of memory and 2 cores. And then we have the medium size environment comes with 7 gigabytes of memory and 4 cores. And then we have the large environment, which comes with 15 gigabytes of memory and 8 cores. It's also worth to mention that there's also support for building in Windows. So you can also get Windows containers that run in your code build, but then you can only use the medium and large environments. So the small environment size is only available for Linux at the moment. So what else needs to be specified here? When you create a code build project, one important thing is that you need to specify a IAM role that is used in the context of the build. So this role needs the permissions that your pipeline actually needs to do its job. And this is a really tricky part because you usually need quite a few permissions to deploy your application, but still you should follow the least privilege principle here. So that's really hard to accomplish because if you are using CloudFormation, for example, to deploy your application, it's also quite hard to figure out what API calls CloudFormation actually does under the hood to deploy your application. So this is something that I really find very hard to achieve. So I usually try to only allow the services that I know that I use. So for example, if I deploy an ECS application, then I know that I need to access the ECS service. I might need to access ECR to push the image and a few other services, maybe load balancing and things like this. So I try to achieve least privilege principles, but it's not really possible to really do it like in a really least privileged principle way, because you cannot specify everything up front because you don't know the resources that are created by CloudFormation. So I'm not sure what your experience is with making sure that the pipeline does not get a lot of permissions, Andreas.
Yeah, I think that's a huge problem. So because I think it's the most important aspect of it is we usually try to deploy the application with all its AWS dependencies within one pipeline. So also to create all the resources in AWS, which also means you need to create IAM roles, IAM policies out of your repository with your deployment pipeline. And that means actually, so as the pipeline needs to create IAM roles and needs to change IAM policies, actually you cannot restrict it anymore, because the pipeline could always itself make changes to your IAM configuration. So that's, I think, a big problem. If you really want to get least privilege here, you then have to use IAM permission boundaries, which makes the whole thing really, really complicated. So I think as we are deploying everything with our deployment pipeline in an automated way, the pipeline needs kind of administration access to your AWS account usually. And it's really hard to restrict it. You can try to do it as good as possible, but I don't think you can get to 100% least privilege here, because it's just too complicated and too much work. It might depend. But I would try to then go to using multiple AWS accounts to restrict your environments. I think that makes then maybe much more sense than going into that.
Yeah, so that's I think also where a code pipeline comes into the whole comes to stage, and because if you have multi-account deployments, then you could put a code build project in your test account, and you could put a code build project in your production account, and from code build you can trigger the code build project in the test account, and if this was successful you can trigger the one in the production account. So there you can really get separation. So in the test account you have one project with its own IAM role, and in the admin and the production account you have another code build project with its own IAM permissions. So you get better separation here if you want to make sure that the test and production account workloads are separated. Yeah, so that's an important thing that you mentioned here, Andreas. Okay, so one thing, or the last thing that I want to mention regarding code build, is that all the logs, so everything that you write to standard out or standard error in your commands or in your script that you run in the commands, is shipped to CloudWatch Logs. So this is the place where you can find at least at the beginning your pipeline usually doesn't work in the first execution, so you can get information what is not working and then fix it and then try again. So that's a very important piece to get the logs from CloudWatch Logs. And this is also nicely integrated into the CodeBuild UI. So if you use the management console with CodeBuild, you get very easy access to the logs. So this is really, I think that's one of the services where the UI is really well done in CodeBuild. So it's really easy to access the logs. And what's also very interesting is that CodeBuild emits events to CloudWatch events in case of, or if a project was successful, a build was successful, or if it failed. So you can also use this to notify your team if a build failed. So that's also a very interesting feature. And then you need to create a CloudWatch event rule to capture those events.
So let's summarize what you have introduced us to today. So you're saying that using code build and only code build is a way to build simple pipelines in a very short amount of time. And it comes with all the advantages of an AWS service. So you get a managed build environment. AWS takes care of scaling and operating the underlying infrastructure. And it's relatively simple to build your deployment pipelines with code build. And as you mentioned at the beginning, if it gets more complex, if you have to do things in parallel, or if you have more complex scenarios, only then you should have a look into a code pipeline. Is that a good summary of what you said today?
Yes, that's a great summary, Andreas. So two things that I would like to add here is, so if you are coming from something like CircleCI, TravisCI, or GitLab pipelines, then I would recommend that you start with code build in a standalone mode. And if you master this, then you can check out code pipeline. But if you come from, for example, CircleCI, and then you look at code pipeline, then you feel like, what do I have to do here? So this is very complicated. I don't understand how it works. And so it's really a whole different thing if you are coming from one of the other services. So I'm not aware of something like code pipeline, actually. So this is really a different thing. So I would recommend starting with code build here, yeah? And the second point that I want to add here is, so we mentioned the problem with the IAM permissions that you have when you define the code build project and if you try to follow the least privilege principle. The good news is that it is much easier to achieve it if you use code build. If you run your job in something else, so for example, Circle or in GitLab pipelines, then you still have the same problem, but you also have the problem, how do I get the credentials onto this in this build environment. So for example, in CircleCI, you define environment variables with your AWS access key, for example, then you need a way to rotate them because otherwise you will have problems here. So this is something that you have to do additionally, rotate the credentials if you're not using code build, if you use something else. So that's something that you do. And with GitLab, I think, or maybe Andreas, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but the permissions are kind of, so the GitLab runner runs on EC2 or on Docker, and it uses the permissions of the EC2 or the container, right?
Yes, it can use it. Yeah, that's correct. Yeah.
Okay. Otherwise, you assume a role to do your actual build.
Or you can also use environment variables, as you said with CircleCI. Yeah, correct. So that's an option here. Yeah, but what you say is correct. So the problem with least privilege when doing deployment pipelines, it's the same problem no matter which tool you use. So because the problem is how do I grant access to my deployment pipeline and to which part? So that doesn't go away with other solutions as well. That's correct. Okay, so maybe important to mention, so we are currently writing a book, Rapid Docker on AWS, and this is where we also use code build to build a very simple deployment pipeline that builds Docker images, pushes them to the ECR Docker registry, and then also deploys it to your AWS environment on ECS. So if you want to get a full picture with a whole application running on AWS, including a deployment pipeline, you should definitely check out our Rapid Docker on AWS book. You will find a link in the show notes. And yeah, we are currently finishing the last chapter. So it's almost done. I would say it's 90% is done now. So a good time to check that out and get your own copy.
Okay, great. So I think it's time to finish here, Andreas.
Yes. So thanks for listening, and speak to you next or in 2 weeks, Michael.
Yes. Bye. Thank you.
Bye.